passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague Joe Healy, and we are here to talk about conference tournaments. That's the week we're in. As we record this, it is Thursday morning, and I guess it is important to timestamp that, Joe, as things change quickly this week, and weather permitting, I guess things change quickly. And hopefully you're getting to this Thursday evening or Friday morning, so not too much of this has gone stale already. But it's a rapidly changing time of year, and we're going to try and hit on the big developments that have happened so far this week as play has gotten underway for most of the tournaments around the country. I would say maybe even nearly all of them. The weather has certainly been impacting it, and some of these tournaments do start a little later in the week. Some of them intend to start here on Thursday, but a lot of developments already in terms of, just the actual tournaments themselves and the NCAA tournament bubbles. So Joe, it's the time of year where you have to have your head on a swivel, and certainly this year, that's all the more true, I feel like, with the way the weather has been impacting a lot of tournaments, particularly those in the Southeast and the Midwest.
As the old band, The Guess Who, said, Mother Nature, take it over. That's been, truthfully, you could argue, I think, the storyline of conference tournaments so far is just the weather. It seems like every time me just simply tweeting out a picture of the Big 12 tournament being played under roof at Globe Life Field got quite a response. A lot of people CCing the SEC on on that. So that has really been pretty pervasive, and it's not just the SEC and it's not just the Southeast. I mean, the Big Ten has yet to start its tournament. So that's been the big story. So I was sitting next to somebody in the press box yesterday, and they were scrolling on the Watch ESPN site to like figure out what they were going to, what they were going to put on their screen. And they were like, what's even playing right now? And we had to like go through and figure out who was what the options actually were, because you never know who's actually on the field at any given moment. And this tournament, or this conference tournament week, is already kind of the deal where, to your point, you have to keep your head on a swivel, because you've got teams sometimes playing two games in a day. So fortunes can shift wildly from day to day, hour to hour. It's what makes it fun, but man, I find myself, I don't know about what your process is, but I find myself kind of at the end of every day, or whenever there's a lull in, a blowout game or whatever in the tournament I'm at, just having to kind of download a lot of information very quickly to try to figure out, okay, who's actually alive in this tournament? Who's alive in this tournament? Like, who's doing what? Because during the day, especially if you're trying to focus on a game you're covering, it's really hard to kind of keep your finger on what's going on other places.
Yeah, that is 100% true. And I honestly don't even try a lot of the times while I'm like actually at the field. It's to keep the pulse of what's going on more than like one, maybe two other places, unlike during the regular season when I'm like kind of obsessed with trying to keep track of everything that's going on this week. I just kind of admit like it's just not going to happen for you. It's okay. But we're getting down to it here. There are just a few days before the selections are made on Monday, and a lot still to play for. I guess if you look at the latest field of 64 projection, which you can see at baseballamerica.com, or doing that daily leading up to Monday, I think the top eight, nine, the top nine sure feel like they're relatively locked into being the top nine. I think that Southern Miss still has a chance to get into the top eight if they win the Conference USA tournament. I don't know who that would kick out of the top eight seeds, but I think that's basically where you're at. I mean, I suppose Notre Dame, which actually has not started play yet in the ACC tournament. Thank you, pool play. Or did they start? I lose track of this. Notre Dame with a strong showing would potentially, still be able to get in there, I suppose. But I think you're really starting to lock in those top eight seeds. Their top 12-ish of the hosts feel locked in, but we still have a lot to play for. And then of course there is actually the matter of the tournaments themselves. Like you said, Joe, though, the weather has been a huge story so far in the Southeast where I am. I'm at the SEC tournament in Hoover. The weather just has been spotty and there's been a lot of rain. And the SEC right now has played 5 games in 2 days. They would like to have played 8. So they're definitely behind. And today, the weather forecast, didn't look good for much of the week, but it does seem to have cleared up some, and they're going to play at least a couple games today. I feel pretty confident, but they're still going to be behind. And how is that going to affect things for all of these teams moving forward as they try and cram all the games back in? And the SEC is not the only tournament around here that's been affected by that. The Sun Belt, which is playing like 90 minutes up the road in Montgomery, Alabama, is already made the move to single elimination. The Conference USA tournament in Hattiesburg, they've definitely been impacted. And like you said, the Big Ten has lost an entire day, and I have not investigated their plan as to how they're going to make up for the fact that they run a true 8-team double elimination tournament that has lost an entire day of games. So it's been unfortunate that this is where we're at, that we have to spend some time talking about the weather, but it really has been tough. And I hate that, like, this is the second time in 4 or 5 years that the Sun Belt has had to go to a single elimination format. And that's no fun, that's the way it has to go. And, the Sun Belt this year isn't a one bid league. So I feel better about it this year than I did when they did it the last time. It just felt really bad that the whole bid, the whole conference, their tournament hopes were just coming down to a single elimination tournament. That's not what baseball's about. But I guess the thing for the Sun Belt is at least this year they're in a position where they're looking at multi bids, and it's not all gonna, your postseason hopes are not all just gonna come down to this single elimination tournament.
Yeah, it's so much. I mean, conference tournaments, let's be real too. I mean, a vast majority of the teams that are going to conference tournaments, I mean, yes, they want to win the tournament, and some, at least one, and more likely several conference tournaments will be won by teams that we would have never imagined would be able to do it. Shout out to Presbyterian last year, right? So, but the reality of the situation is that conference tournaments are as much about the student athlete experience, right? It's a fun road trip. It's postseason games. It's heightened tension, especially if maybe the last few weeks of your regular season felt kind of inconsequential. Like, it's kind of a nice change of pace. And the idea that there are going to be some Sun Belt teams that have spent the last 3 days basically just sitting in a hotel and then are going to go to the field tomorrow, Friday, and play one game and play poorly and be done is tough, because you don't get the opportunity to bounce back. You don't get that second game. It's a tough deal. And for the league, you're right. I mean, I think it is a good point that, hey, this league is pretty much locked into being a three bid league at this point. So, you know, it's not as harmful as it was last time around when it was a one bid league and the entire postseason hopes of every single team in that conference were 100% tied to the tournament, but it still kind of stinks. That's what they've ended up with, but you know, you got to figure something out. And, you know, it's there's only so many options now when you have to be done by Sunday.
So here at the SEC tournament, a lot of the discourse has been around, should this thing be in a dome? Would that be a good idea or a bad idea? And I'm definitely a big proponent of dome because I like the idea of baseball being played and not having to deal with rain delays. I mean, Hoover has always been a great host for this tournament. It's very drivable for so many fans. It's a stadium that is quite large. They can pack a lot of people into this place. And there's a lot of history here. The SEC really doesn't have to share it with anything. So they have been able to make all sorts of upgrades. And, you know, there's no concern over anything. Like, they just have, this is their home. And so I love that aspect of it, frankly. But I don't think the SEC even has, you know, the sway nor really the money. Doming stadiums is quite expensive. They might have the money. Well, they'd have to probably cut some corners elsewhere if they devoted a bunch of their budget to doming Hoover. So assuming that that's not an option, like, you would have to leave Hoover to play in a dome. And for me, that would probably be worth it. But I do understand the concern about, well, like, then you're playing in this massive stadium and it's not going to be full. And look, the dome, there are four domes in the SEC footprint, four baseball domes, like two other football domes. And I don't think anyone wants to see like the, you know, what they do for the Minnesota Vikings stadium for the Gophers and early in the season. I don't think you want to be playing postseason baseball in the Superdome or whatever, but like, I suppose that'd be possible too. But you have four baseball stadiums in the SEC footprint, but they're on the edges. You know, you're talking about Miami, St. Petersburg, Houston, and Dallas. And, you know, if you did that, it would definitely impact the turnout. And then you're playing in a major league stadium that's already not going to look full, even if you put 15,000 people in it. So I am like aware that these are not optimal conditions. But Joe, you are sitting in, not presently right this second, but like you have sat for a day so far watching a conference tournament in a dome. The Big 12 is playing in Arlington this year at Globe Life Field. What are your impressions of that? Is this good? From a fan perspective, obviously things are a little different there because in the Big 12, Dallas is kind of in the heart of the footprint, so it's still very travelable. I don't think that's a word for all of the fans, and there are just a lot of alumni from those schools that live in the Metroplex itself, so that helps as well. But what have your impressions of the dome been to this point?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's because the SEC was having problems from basically minute one with weather or just because it's something that was a talking point in general, the idea of that, you know, we're all thankful that it's being played indoors has been very front of mind. You know, I think I was at the practice day before the tournament started. Not, I didn't hear every coach speak. I didn't talk to every coach, but the ones I talked with, you know, all kind of said like, we're thankful to have the dome because it means we're just, it's one less thing to worry about. Right. So now we just have to worry about, you know, pace of play issues and, you know, getting to the end of the week when everyone's out of pitching and games that take 4 hours, which is inevitably going to happen. So, but those are just,
I got a pace of play solution. Pete Hansen pitches every game for every
That's team. Right. We're going to build the entire plane out of Pete Hansen. Yeah, that was very helpful. Yesterday, really, truly, Wednesday's games at the Big 12, really well pitched across the board, which you might say, oh, well, it's the first day of the tournament. And that's true in terms of like bullpen usage. So you had all of your best bullpen guys fresh, but most of the teams were not starting their true Friday guy. And so it's kind of a mixed bag typically on that first day, but they were all pretty well pitched, generally speaking. So kind of got fortunate. That will not hold as the pitching kind of disintegrates throughout the rest of the week. But it's I think the concerns about atmosphere are valid. Some of it will depend on where you play this thing, right? If you play it somewhere convenient to the biggest fan bases in the SEC, the Mississippi schools and LSU. I mean, we see what LSU turns out to Houston when they play, right? Most of the lower bowl of Minute Maid Park is filled. You know, it's 85% full in the lower bowl of Minute Maid Park when LSU plays a big game there against Texas or Texas A&M. I guess that wouldn't be A&M because they're conference foes. But my point being, when they play big games there, the fans turn out. So, and that's a pretty good atmosphere. So it could be done, but games that don't involve those kinds of teams, like they are, I mean, it feels pretty cavernous here. I mean, they had good crowds yesterday. I mean, they broke a record yesterday, the Big 12 did, for a number of fans in a single day at the Big 12 tournament. And it just didn't feel like it because it's a big league park and it's a big, big league park. Globe Life Field is a massive structure. The roof is really high. The seating decks go really high, which doesn't matter for this in terms of people sitting, but the concourses are really wide. So I did a couple laps around the concourse, as I do during these long days, really just to move my legs as much as anything else. And it just feels like nobody's there because these concourses are just massive. So people are very spread out.
Would you say everything is bigger in Texas?
You could say that, yes. Including the baked potatoes at the lunch buffet yesterday. My goodness, I don't know what they put in the soil for these baked potatoes, but they were massive. Like I couldn't get through it. They had it was like a barbecue baked potato situation, but you put the barbecue on yourself and like sauced it yourself. It was really neat. Kudos to the Big 12. I appreciated that. But I was like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, barbecue baked potato is that's a solid lunch. Like it's a nice contained lunch and it's something you're not seeing all the time. I appreciate that.
It was an inspired option, I would say, but it was just the kind of deal where I was like, I can't eat this whole thing because I'm going to feel terrible and I'm going to fall asleep in my seat. So, but it was an inspired lunch. But anyway, long story short, I think it's a good idea. I just think you're taking such a stressor because weather is such a stressor this time of year. We're going to see it in regionals next weekend, by the way, too. I've not started to look ahead at expanded forecasts for the likely host sites, but it's just going to happen. The thing that happens, though, that I don't want to say pessimistic because that implies that I'm like rooting for one side of this debate or the other. But what would make me pessimistic about the idea is just that for every year we have like this, we're going to have two or three that are mostly OK weather wise and we kind of forget about it. And so I'm not altogether sure that like action on something like this is going to be a top priority until the next time we have a year like this. And then suddenly we'll start talking about it again.
Yeah. And look, the SEC is frankly fortunate that they can even explore this because, you know, the ACC has only two domes in their footprint, unless you want to, you know, define their footprint as somehow including Milwaukee, because that's a part of Chicagoland and like Notre Dame is there. And they're both in Florida. And, you know, the Pac-12, not that they're probably interested in doming, like Arizona has other weather problems, but you know, they only have the one. And if the Diamond, well, I guess they have two, if they're willing to go to Seattle, but you know, it's just like the SEC does have four and that is unique that they have so many. So like, they actually could like, look at this. Would Houston be a spot? Would St. Petersburg be a spot? You know, Miami is probably too far flung. Would Arlington potentially be a spot? But I mean, I feel like it would be worth it, but I'm not a fan, you know, here for the atmosphere. And one of the great things about Hoover is that you have all of the like various like super fan elements of going to any SEC ballpark. They all come to Hoover. You know, I know everyone right now is thinking, yeah, the Whistler's there. Is that great? Like, okay, yes. But on the other hand, like that is an experience. That's a Vanderbilt experience. And he's here. You have the guy doing the LSU cheer in the, you know, on the little walkway in in the stands there in Hoover. You have there's a woman at Auburn that like paces, like doing laps like throughout the game at Auburn on the kind of little concourse they have at Hoover. The Auburn Stadium has the same thing. She spends like all game walking back and forth. As I recall, she's like an academic advisor. She's here. She's doing it during an Auburn game. Like you can get anything you want during whatever your favorite little quirk of SEC baseball is during the regular season. Like they all make their way here. And, you know, would that hold true? It wouldn't be the same somewhere else. So you would be losing out on things like that. But again, are we trying to play the games like that? The best way to do that is to find a dome. So I don't know. There are certainly multiple sides to this. I don't know that anything's going to happen in the immediate. Hoover has a contract and all the rest of it. But as the SEC looks towards expansion, and like Oklahoma and Texas are coming, I don't know. Is that an exclusive story to this podcast, Joe?
Truly, no one's talking about it.
Yeah, like Oklahoma and Texas are coming to the SEC. Breaking news, and so that's going to bring them to 16 teams, and they are going to have to take a long look at the format of the tournament. And in doing so, I hope they investigate some radical solutions like a dome or two stadiums or multiple weekends of this thing. Whatever, like look at anything, be completely open, not just okay. How do we cram? Do not just decide, do we want to leave this tournament at 12 teams or do we want to make it 14? And then what does that format look like? No, I would want to see them examine everything, like up to including like all 16 teams make the tournament and they do something Southland conference style, like they're doing this year, running the tournament over two weekends. But you got to look at it. And there's a great time because there is this impetus to look at the format anyway.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say too is that I think the Big 12 doing its tournament in a big league park, you know, with the roof, I think is kind of broken a little bit of a wall, because the perception I've always had is, yeah, you might say, is that I think there's always kind of been this perception that, well, yeah, I mean, that would be nice, but like a big league team would never let you do that. And like, so... And yes, the stadium has to be open for business. And let me tell you, friends, Globe Life Field is open for business. All you need to do is look at like how many college games were played there, and not like Oklahoma played a ton, but it wasn't just Oklahoma. Like there were a lot of like TCU and Nebraska played a series there. Like they were looking for games, and their concerts they have coming in the fall are voluminous. So they are very much open for business. So you have to find a willing partner, but maybe there's also something to the fact that, you know, the Big 12 is going to play this tournament here this week, and the stadium is going to be fine and probably have, you know, made cash on it and everything turned out good. I mean, there is something too that other teams might look at that and say like, you know, maybe this is something we can consider. Maybe it's not going to, you know, maybe the team isn't going to hate it the way we think they will. Maybe it'll be fine. Maybe it's not going to chew up our turf in the way we think it will. Like all those things that teams might be afraid of, like the fact that the Big 12 tournament's going to get played this week and it'll be fine, I think would be helpful towards maybe opening some other teams up to the idea.
Now, notably, the Rangers have turf in that ballpark. The Astros do not. Though Tropicana, definitely turfed. So, yeah, I just would love to see, I just want to know that the SEC is looking at all solutions, that they're not just going to say like, all right, Hoover, like let's cram some more things into this. Because it, like I said, there's an impetus for change anyway coming. Like let's examine how to best manage this great event moving forward with a 16 team league. All right, enough about weather, Joe. We can debate weather anytime we want. This is baseball. It's weather is a part of it. Let's get to some of the on field action, and we'll do that here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game, and that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
All right, Joe, on the field, one of the most notable things that's happened this week has not happened at the SEC or the Big 12 tournament. It is East Carolina. East Carolina, don't look now. East Carolina is in the latest projected field of 64 that I published very early on Thursday morning. East Carolina's a host. East Carolina's RPI is up to 18. They have won 15 straight games. They won on Tuesday in their conference tournament opener, the way the format works in the American. They didn't play yesterday on Wednesday, so they'll play again today. And if they win this tournament, I fully think that East Carolina is hosting. My only hesitancy on could they host if they don't win the tournament is that they're going to take two losses and no one else from the American is in the top 50. So their RPI might tumble slightly if they were to lose the tournament. But if they go out and win, and look, they're the best team in this league by a comfortable margin this year. They can beat anyone. They've won 15 straight games. Most of those have been conference games. There's going to be a fourth straight regional in Greenville.
Yeah, just it really impressive on a number of levels. One is the stealth nature of it, where it kind of feels like we all collectively looked up, you know, with a couple of weeks left in the regular season, and we're like, holy cow, like, here comes ECU. And part of that is because we kind of not gave up on them. I think we always knew there was a very good chance they were going to, even in a diminished state, which we thought they were after they got swept by Bryant to begin the season and then, you know, lost a series to North Carolina and just got off to a generally slow start. But I think that we always thought there was a pretty good chance of, hey, this team might stumble out of the gate and might not be a classic ECU team, but there's a pretty good chance they still win the American. And that's kind of what they did, but then they kind of blew past that. And I mean, they tied their best conference record as a member of the American. They also went 20-4 back in 2019. And this is conference record wise, you know, the best team they've had since 2004, when they went 25-5 in Conference USA. Now, some of that is the American that you kind of alluded to is pretty weak this year. So they were kind of able to waltz through that to some degree. But there's also something to be said about this team has done a really good job. And Cliff Godwin and his staff have done a really good job just figuring things out on the fly. And let's not forget that this is a team that lost their ace in Carson Wisenhunt before the season started. You know, Jake Kuchmaner, who was, you know, going to be like the steady guy in the rotation that you kind of built it around, has been injured. So they've kind of rebuilt the pitching staff on the fly. They've put CJ Mayhew at the front of the rotation, and that's worked out. They use their relievers liberally and all kinds of different shapes and forms. And the offense really hasn't been as dynamic as it was last year. They really never replaced Connor Norby in terms of dynamism. And like, that makes sense because he was one of the best players in the country last year. So it hasn't been perfect, but they've figured it out. And my goodness, they're sitting here, in position to host a regional if they finish the week well. And that's just such an impressive job by that team. Cause I don't think even as recently as maybe a month ago, I even if in the most optimistic versions of it, I don't think we would have predicted this.
No, I don't. I certainly would not have. And CJ Mayhew has been excellent at the front of that rotation. Bryson Worrell has been so good for them in a big role, in the lineup and defensively. He had an incredible throw from center field to throw out a runner at home plate in that game on Tuesday. There's a lot of really big time players there still, but there's also just a lot of dudes that are grinding and are playing hard and just playing the kind of baseball you'd expect a Cliff Godwin team to play. And it's really been impressive to see. The one like mark, the bad mark on their resume right now is that they're just 2-7 against top 50 teams. And I'm kind of here to tell you, I don't think that's going to matter. I think if their RPI is as strong as it's going to be, and they're going to have north of 40 wins, they're 39 right now. If they win the tournament, obviously they'll have to win a few more. They'll go north of 40 wins. They'll have an RPI in the teens. I don't think there's anything that you can do to stop them from hosting at that point. And, I have been saying they need to win the tournament, but again, I'd be interested to see what happened to their RPI if they didn't. If they can keep it in the top 20 and lose in the championship game or something, maybe they'll host anyway. It's just been an incredible run. They have all sorts of momentum right now. And the committee's not going to do this because they don't think this way anymore. But I will say, there's nobody hosting in the Carolinas right now. If it's not them, or, I guess North Carolina's put themselves in the mix too. So it'd be regionally advantageous to have a Greenville regional. There are plenty of teams that you can send there. So I don't think the committee would be adverse to finding a way to make sure East Carolina or UNC potentially gets a home regional, because it makes creating the field a lot simpler, I think, if that happens. But again, that's not why it would happen, but it is a nice byproduct of the fact that East Carolina has really found something here in the second half of the season. All right, Joe, let's just stay in the Carolinas. The ACC tournament happening in Charlotte. And so far, the story of the week has been that Pitt and North Carolina State, two teams that are, the way the format works in the ACC is that you're in pool play and everyone plays two games. It's three teams play two games against the other two teams in your pool. If there's a tie, and often there are ties, the higher seed automatically advances. So it's hard if you're the lowest seeded team in your pool to advance. You have to win both of your games. We have two teams already into the semifinals of the ACC tournament, and they're both lower seeded teams. Pitt and NC State have come out and they won their first two games in the ACC tournament. And NC State is a team we talked about coming in to the week. What if they went 0-2? What would that do to them? Maybe they would fall off the bubble. Well, they eliminated all of that concern. They're all set right now. Pitt is still probably just needs to go out and win this tournament. Their RPI is problematic. They finished under 500 in the league during the regular season, But both of those teams doing everything they need so far to make sure that they continue playing baseball. And, you know, both of them are really good teams. You know, we've seen at times what they're capable of, and they went out and they've played really well so far this week.
Yeah, I said offline, I think it's true that the ACC is like a level, you know, it just kind of keeps like bouncing back to the middle. So we come into this week thinking like, you know, is NC State in some trouble? They got swept the last week of the season. They're now under 500 and, you know, under 500 in the conference and not playing particularly well. Like, and then, you know, here they are, you know, winning a couple games, putting themselves firmly back into the field. And, you know, we kind of gave up on Pitt, and there's still a lot of, they still have work to do, but, you know, but they've put themselves in good position. And, you know, and meanwhile, it's other teams, and that now we have kind of turned our gaze to some other teams in the ACC. It just seems like this season could go on literally forever. And I think we just play this game into eternity. We're week to week. It's just now we're worried about these teams, and now we're worried about these teams. And I think it's just been an ACC that's kind of been like that. I think the ACC tournament just in the 2 days has been a microcosm of the ACC season at large, really.
Yeah. And everything's been so up and down all year, obviously. You know, just a week ago, Pitt was getting, you know, getting beat by Georgia Tech at home. And that had been a really big series for Pitt. They could have come to Charlotte in a completely different place if that doesn't happen. It's just the roller coaster nature of so many of these schools is certainly just continuing there in Charlotte. I'll be curious to see what some of the other you know, Notre Dame hasn't played yet. Virginia's only played once. You know, what do we see so far? But I do think Pitt got you know, Pitt beating Louisville, which is what sent them to the semifinals, was not surprising to me. Louisville just generally doesn't play very well in the ACC tournament. Last year was a slight exception because they really needed to, but even then they only went 1-1, I think. It just isn't a thing that they're really ever seemingly all that interested in. Meanwhile, Pitt, very interested in playing well. And I just think one of the things about these major conference tournaments is a lot of times you see a disparity in want. And, you know, it just seemed like this week NC State went into Charlotte and was like, no, we want to play well here. We know that we need to play well here, and we are ready for it. And, you know, Miami threw Carson Palmquist yesterday in the game that NC State won. And NC State did not care. They put up like 6 runs on Palmquist, and Tommy White hit 3 home runs and broke the ACC freshman home run record and all the rest of it. And I mean, just a really impressive performance by NC State in a game that they maybe didn't actually need to have, but certainly solidified a lot of things against a really good opponent that was out there throwing at their ace.
Yeah, I'm not, I guess in the micro, a little, you know, surprised to see NC State here just for the reasons we discussed, but like in the macro view, it's not all that surprising just because it's an NC State team that, yeah, it's a very different team from last year, obviously, but it's a team that still just generally plays like with a lot of pride and want to, you know, it's a team that, it feels like you don't really ever have to worry about whether or not they're going to come out and give a good effort. They might get outplayed, and they've gotten outplayed a decent amount this year at times. But so seeing it take place, I think you even called it before the tournament that you thought that, you know, it would be very on brand for NC State to come out and just play well
at the, I said, win the tournament. I'm standing by that.
Yeah. I mean, that's just kind of a thing they do. I mean, they did it last year, right? So,
Duke won it.
Right, got to the final, I should say. Yeah, so they got pretty doggone close. Yeah, so that from that standpoint, not all that surprising. And Tommy White, I mean, the most impressive thing there is just the way he's, you know, he came out so hot, became such a phenomenon, and then, you know, hit a period of time when he was struggling a little bit as the book kind of got out on him, as they say. And then to kind of push back on that and get going again is really impressive, because not every freshman can do that. The really good one, you know, Spencer Torkelson could do that, but he was Spencer Torkelson, right? But not every freshman can do that. History is littered with freshmen who end up having on paper what look like really, really good freshman seasons, But if you look under the hood, it's like a really hot start and then a taper at the end of the year. And the numbers just started off so well that, you know, they had a long way to fall, you know, but he's really pushed back on kind of that freshman wall and has had a really, really nice season. It's going to go down as one of the best freshman seasons ever, frankly, for any hitter. And just really impressive stuff for him not to kind of succumb to that, those things that are difficult for a freshman as the season wears on.
Before we move on from the ACC here quickly, I will say that Clemson lost their first game of the ACC tournament to North Carolina. They play Virginia Tech tonight. That's Thursday night. For me, that's a must-win game for Clemson. They have an incredibly bubbly resume. We've talked about that at length. But I think going 0-2 this week in the ACC tournament would probably push them off the bubble. So all they have to do is go out and beat the ACC champs. The thing is, if they do add that Virginia Tech win, they would it would just be a big deal for them to put another top 10 win on their resume. It would certainly be an RPI boost. But I think that if they lose it, their ACC record would be you know, a total of 13-18 overall. And yeah, I'm aware that they're missing a game, but at the end of the day, the raw numbers are what they are. And I don't think that would be enough to get them in.
Yeah, it's a team. This is one we've kind of circled coming off of last week, that Clemson, barring now, if they beat Virginia Tech today, we're singing a different tune. But, you know, they, you know, it strikes me as the type of team that felt at least decent coming out of the final week of the season about what they'd done. And then you kind of look up at the end of conference tournament weeks and realize that it wasn't, you know, that they very well could be that team. And it probably plays into their hand that, you know, Virginia Tech is a team that doesn't have a whole lot to play for here, frankly. And so how willing are they going to be to really be pushing the gas when you know that Clemson is going to be pushing the gas?
This game actually means absolutely nothing for Virginia Tech because of the way the format works. The entirety of Virginia Tech's chances of advancing to the semifinals are on playing North Carolina the next day. So I don't know what that means for Virginia Tech tonight in terms of, again, like how motivated is anyone, but there is something to be said for that from Clemson's perspective, and we'll see if that changes how Virginia Tech plays the game. But I would also say that, look, Virginia Tech hits a lot of home runs. That ballpark in Charlotte leads to a lot of home runs. I wouldn't want to be playing Virginia Tech in that ballpark, regardless of whether they're going to throw their best pitchers or not.
Yeah. And also, this is Virginia Tech. Everything is new to them, right? It's a Virginia Tech team that, you know, they probably, even though they know where they are, probably feels like a team that still wants to prove some things, and winning an ACC tournament title is on that list. So, you know, they also might just be ready to go out and prove themselves and win another trophy.
No doubt about that. So that's 7 o'clock tonight. And if you're listening to this Friday morning, you know what happened. All right, Joe, let's go where you are. Let's go to Arlington. Let's all take a road trip and meet Joe in Arlington, you guys. He's there until Sunday. I think we can all do it. Let's roll to Arlington.
And grab some Shipley donuts and Whataburger on your way, and I'll reimburse you when you get here.
Is there a Nebraska Furniture Mart we can meet at?
I've not. It's a different part of town than the part of town I was in last time, but I will have to look into that. I have not yet. I forgot about that. I forgot that was here that we birthed that joke. I'll make a note, but not that I'm aware of.
Well, I guess we'll all meet at the Six Flags then, because that's right by that stadium.
That is, yes, I can see a roller coaster out the windows if I look out to center field.
Yeah, that's a fun little quirk.
Yeah, take that, Georgia Tech, with your skyline background.
roller coaster. Like literally the only quirk that they built into that stadium. But that's not a bad one. all right. So yesterday in the Big 12, they got things underway on Wednesday there. And for me, I mean, you can tell me I'm wrong. You were there. I was just watching on TV. But the best game was the first one. The biggest game was the first one. That was Texas taking on Oklahoma State in the 4-5 game. In the morning, Pete Hansen was outstanding for Texas, and the Horns beat the Pokes. Oklahoma State continues I don't want to say a slide. They did just win a road series last weekend, but they're stumbling a little bit here in May. And Texas, much like ECU, is finishing strong and into the hosting race in a pretty big way. And yesterday was certainly a big part of that for the Horns.
Yeah, you're right. It was a pretty chalky day at the Big 12 tournament yesterday. And the big game happened to be the first one. And you know, Texas with a really nice win over Oklahoma State. It kind of continues. You know, we had this weird, we've talked about it quite a bit, but this weird situation coming into the Big 12 when the teams with the best RPIs in the hosting mix, Texas and Oklahoma State, don't really have the best resumes. And the teams with the best resumes, you know, TCU and arguably Tech, and depending on the flavor you like, Oklahoma, like, don't have the RPIs. They have the resume, not the RPI. But Texas is getting close to kind of being able to put both together. Now, it probably wants to do a little more this week to feel comfortable. So that will be important. But, you know, don't look now, but, you know, they finished the regular season strong, and maybe the RPI didn't come on as much with the sweep of Kansas as they were hoping and I was thinking, but now they're, you know, as of last night, and I'm sure Teddy has more updated information, but they were in the top 16 last night. So the RPI is there. They're more than likely not going to see any team in the Big 12 tournament that can really hurt their RPI, especially if they continue to win games. And, you know, don't look now, but the number one team in the country, like, look, they're not that team. They're just not. They proved during the regular season they weren't going to be. Injuries, a part of it, absolutely, yes. But just misfortune, another part of it. Team just hasn't played well in a lot of aspects. And yet, like, they've mostly kept their heads above water. There's been times where it felt like they were kind of floundering and drowning, but they never really got there. It was always a team that was pretty solid throughout. You know, won some big series. It's you know, easy to forget just because the discourse about them has been relatively negative just because of the preseason expectations, but they've won some big series. They've kept their heads mostly above water, and here they are in position to host. And, you know, what I wrote about yesterday was just the idea that when Pete Hansen pitches, this is still the team we thought they would be, because Pete Hansen has been Pete Hansen this year. And yesterday against Oklahoma State, an offense that can put up runs in bunches, he just carved them up. I mean, it was classic Pete Hansen. You know, it was just immaculate location and mixing and keeping hitters off balance, good pace, like all of it. Just a beautiful performance. And when he does that, which is more often than not, even in the regular season, like this Texas team is what we thought they were going to be. Now the questions come once you get past that, but we're at a time of year when just having someone of Pete Hansen's quality at the front of your rotation counts for a lot, right? Like this week, it might not, because they're going to have to win at least three more games to lift a trophy. And that's tough for anybody. But you get into a regional, and especially if you host one, by the way, because then you probably don't have to use Pete Hansen in the opener. You know, having Pete Hansen keeps you more than likely on the good side of the bracket. You get into a super regional, Pete Hansen pitching well gets you halfway to the College World Series. And then once you get in the College World Series with the days off built in, if they make a deep run, they could use Pete Hansen three times. So it doesn't buy you everything, but it buys you a lot. And he's just one guy. Like, I'm not saying that he is the be all and end all there. They're going to have to play better in all facets than what they've played for a lot of the regular season. But man, when he throws like that, it's hard not to think about the fact that, like, he is a little bit of a cheat code for that team.
Yeah, I absolutely could see this team in Omaha still, you know, because you said all of that and you didn't even mention Ivan Melendez. And that's fair. He wasn't a big part of the story yesterday. But that's a dude that, much like Cody Clemens, kind of carried Texas to Omaha in 2018. I mean, Melendez could have that same kind of postseason. And, you know, you put Pete Hansen in as, you got to win your regional. That's fine. Most regionals are won by the hosts. You put Pete Hansen in a super regional, and, like, yeah, as long as he does what he does, you know, and you scratch out the three runs that he needs, you know, you're in a great spot already. And there is some depth, like there are options at Texas, and, you know, whoever they're matched up against might not have that many options. You know, it'll just depend on the draw at that point, but you know, as we say all the time, the number of teams with actual third starters, it's very low. And, you know, so as long as they don't end up matched up against Tennessee, you know, it certainly isn't taken as rote that, or it shouldn't be taken as rote that the Texas would just have a disadvantage in a game three of a super regional on the mound. They may very well have an advantage. And yeah, I just, the way that they're playing right now, the way that they can play at their best, the fact that they have this star power in Melendez, in Hanson, in still a Murphy Staley, Eric Kennedy's back, Trey Faltini sure looked pretty good yesterday. I mean, there is still a lot to love about this team. No, they're not who we thought they were. There are a lot of reasons why they're not who we thought they were. But they're still a very, very good, very dangerous team this time of year.
I would say a honorable mention yesterday of interesting things is, Texas Tech, beats an overmatched Kansas State team, and an error filled inning for Kansas State early in the game really ended up torpedoing them, because Kansas State's pitching actually competed pretty well, I thought. But the story there was Mason Molina, a freshman left-hander with really good stuff, who pitched for Texas Tech. And he was a guy who was on radars coming into the year because he was a highly ranked recruit, and it was clear he was going to have big innings early on. And it's been a mixed bag for him, but yesterday was his best outing. And Texas Tech does this kind of thing periodically where it feels all year like they don't maybe have as many answers on the mound as they want. And it's a lot of mixing and matching. And sometimes it feels like they find things late in the game. Like, it seems like they're one of those teams that really does a good job of keeping all of its options open all the time. Whereas other programs, by the time you get to the postseason, you really know who their core guys are. And Tech does have these like rabbit out of hat moments sometimes. And maybe Molina's one of them. The stuff is certainly there. He'll walk you a little bit, but he didn't yesterday. So that was a step forward. So on a team that already feels pretty good about its first two in the rotation with Andrew Morris and Brandon Birdsall, and those guys are still yet to throw this week. If Molina's able, he's not going to do that every time out, but my goodness, if he's just 70% of what he was on Wednesday, that's a real weapon for Texas Tech, and really does kind of change the, especially if they're going to have to go on the road for a regional, it does really kind of change the calculus for what they might be capable of.
Yeah, that is certainly a significant development there. Tech could use that next arm. You got to love their 1-2, but the depth piece as you get into this time of year is important. Also of note, yesterday in that tournament, Oklahoma beat West Virginia. That in itself wasn't particularly notable. That was chalk, and seemed like Oklahoma played pretty well overall. I know you were happy, or not happy. you were impressed with the way Oklahoma pitched, and that's significant because they weren't throwing Jake Bennett. So I think anytime Oklahoma pitches well and they don't throw Jake Bennett, that's significant. But more to the point, West Virginia lost. West Virginia RPI is down to 40. There are a lot of things that aren't particularly great about their resume. And if they lose again to get knocked out to go 2-Q there in Arlington, they're going to find themselves closer to the bubble than they would find comfortable, I think. And if you start stacking up their resume against what Ole Miss or Alabama has in the SEC, we'll talk about them in a second here. I would not really want to find out if the committee thinks that going 14-12 cumulative in the Big 12 is better than going 14-17 or 14-18 or 15-18, whatever Alabama ends up in the SEC. I don't know that the Mountaineers are going to like the answer.
Yeah, one of the complicating factors there too is that I guess you could look at it two ways. I mean, their matchup today in the elimination game is Kansas State. They have to feel pretty good about that from the standpoint of, okay, we feel like we're gonna win that game. But also, if you take a loss to Kansas State, I mean, it's not an RPI anchor team. Their RPI is not 200, but it's like 100. That's the toughest loss you can take in this field, and so that's not helpful either. So that is like a little bit of a extra sauce on top of, what otherwise would be like a pretty anxious few days for West Virginia. Cause you're right. I mean, they've been like a weird team. I mean, they came on during the season kind of sneakily, and it was, they played pretty well early in Big 12 play. So we kind of felt like, okay, they've just kind of quietly been in the field all season. Like they've never really challenged to be like, hey, maybe West Virginia could win the Big 12. Like, we never really had that conversation. We never really had like the could West Virginia host conversation. Although I think they were in the mix with like every other team in this tournament that if they won the thing, like they started off from a good enough position that I don't think that was inconceivable. And yet here, but here they are, like they dropped five spots in RPI. They're at 40 now. One more loss, you know, could drop them as many spots again. And suddenly, yeah, you're in a pretty uncomfortable position. So it's just been a weird season where they've kind of flown under the radar for the entirety of the season, both on the good side of things and on the bad side of things. And, but it is definitely a story today for sure.
All right, let's flip to the SEC for more bubble talk. We've only played five games in Hoover, but they've been five pretty impactful games. Alabama has won twice, and you might remember the Crimson Tide last year played their way into the NCAA tournament with how they played in Hoover. And here they are trying to do the same thing again. They started from a slightly worse position this year than they did last year. So last year they won their first two games, and it turned out that was enough. They won their first two games this year, and we're looking around and saying, is that enough or do they need one more? And they probably still need one more, but they also, they may not. We'll see. It would come down right to the edge if they did not win again here. But their two wins here so far have been significant. They beat Georgia to open the tournament, and then they beat Arkansas for the third time in a week yesterday. And that has been a big deal for the Tide, that they now have 14 SEC wins. They're up to 41 in RPI. And that's especially big because when you stack them up against Ole Miss, which lost on Tuesday to Vanderbilt, you can find some favorable things for Alabama because they swept Ole Miss and Oxford. And Ole Miss losing that game to Vanderbilt has like started them off on a very anxious week. They are done, obviously, like their resume is the resume, but teams are moving around them and Ole Miss's RPI can still move. They are in front of Alabama for now. Like, how long will that stay the case? So Ole Miss is kind of anxiously waiting right now. And then Kentucky on Wednesday got they opened their SEC tournament with a win against Auburn. That's their third win against Auburn in 6 days. And that had a lot of significance. You know, Kentucky definitely needs more work. They're not done. They're trying to come from a worse position than Alabama, and they only have the one win so far because they've only played one game. But that was a needed win to keep Kentucky in Hoover and in the hunt. And also, whatever hopes Auburn had of being a top eight seed, those were dashed with those three losses in the last 6 days to Kentucky.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, considering it's only been five games, it's been a pretty active.
They don't mess around here. You play a few games, yeah. And there's a lot that happens.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's why I come here. People ask, oh, why do you go to the SEC tournament? Isn't the ACC tournament more interesting this year? Because isn't Tennessee just going to win the SEC tournament? I'm like, yeah, I mean, maybe. But like every game here, there's a huge sign in the outfield. It just means more. And yeah, I mean, like we don't have dead games here in the SEC. They all mean something.
Right. Yeah. Rare is the game, you know, except for, I guess you could argue, except for like maybe the championship game. Interestingly,
yes, that is kind of the dead rubber of the thing, the one that comes with the trophy.
Yeah. It's kind of funny how that works. But yeah, all you can really hope for, we talk about this in the preview podcast this week, all you can hope for is that your conference tournament like really means something at the end. And certainly you can say that about the SEC. And we've seen that so far. I mean, Alabama, you know, I think big picture here, just a really impressive, obviously they would have preferred not to be in this spot a second year in a row, right? But impressive again, when you consider that this is a team that's taken lumps in the SEC and that they're playing in the SEC with a rotation that doesn't have premium stuff from top to bottom. And they're playing in an SEC without, you know, a big lineup, stalwart that they're building around that's having a massive year, like whatever the SEC version of Ivan Melendez is, right? Like they're not Sonny DeShera, you know, pick an LSU hitter, you know, like they don't have those guys.
Lipscomb, Wyatt Langford, yeah, those guys.
Yeah. So they are they're just kind of weathering the storm. And like that, that really is a path to the postseason in the SEC. We've talked about it before. If you just kind of weather the storm and, you know, collect wins here and there and maybe jump up and get somebody. And it's a hard thing to do, to play your best baseball at this time of year, when everyone kind of in the SEC in particular, it seems like everyone in those early stages has something they're really shooting for and playing for. So that's an impressive job. And it, you know, it might come at the expense of, like you said, Ole Miss. I mean, that's another one of those teams that, you know, it feels like, you know, 2 weeks ago when they were on the come up, we thought, okay, this team is probably comfortably in. And then, you know, they lose the last series to Texas A&M, which was, you know, predicted to be the result. I mean, A&M is what A&M is this year. So you, even though that was predicted, they lose that series and it's okay, it slips a little bit. And then, you know, you're in a situation where Vanderbilt holds Carter Holton back and you have to face one of the most talented, you know, at least talented pitchers in the conference. And, you know, he does what he does, and you got a good pitching performance from Dylan DeLucian. It just wasn't quite enough. So that's certainly nervous times for them. And it really is a coin flip when you finish 14-16 in the regular season. Even that, before you lose the Tuesday game in Hoover, you know, that's there's, I saw in various places, some people doing the, you know, the kind of math on how, you know, what percentage of teams that go 14-16 in the SEC get in and what kind of RPIs do they have. So shout out to Nick Suss and Chase Parham and those guys that are on the local beat there, because they both did that kind of research, and it was basically a coin flip. So when you lose that Tuesday game, now your history tells you, anyway, it's a different field every year, I get it. History tells you that you're at something less than a coin flip right now, and that's just not a very comfortable place to be.
Yeah, and the thing about, you know, we get overexcited every year, and I get it. Like, people, you got to have takes, and people want to know, are we in, are we out? And they're asking you on Twitter or chat or texting you, calling, you know, whatever, stopping you on the street. I don't get stopped on the street to get asked Field of 64 questions. The people of Washington, D.C., I don't think really care.
I was actually about to stop you there either way and just been like, wait a minute, you. Because I thought maybe you meant like on the streets of Hoover.
Well, maybe, yeah, maybe here. I will say, though, I did see a Mississippi State baseball national championship flag when I was out, you know, about a month ago. So they're there. I know they're there, but in general. Anyway, people want to know, like, that's the one, number one question on everyone's mind once you get to May. Are you in? Are you out? Can we host? Can we not host? And so you want to make, like, split second, like, snap judgments. And the snap judgment on Ole Miss after they swept LSU was, they did it, they're in. And like, it was never going to be that simple. And it certainly isn't that simple coming down to it. I think they're going to find a way to get in. They have a strength of schedule that's 15. They have a winning record away from Oxford. The 8-13 top 50 mark is not outstanding. If you look at the top 25 mark, it is much better. Like, when you start comparing them to other bubble teams, like, it looks pretty darn good overall. Like I said, like, compare them to West Virginia. The only thing West Virginia has in their favor over Ole Miss is that they have a winning record in the Big 12. Is that, I am a big proponent of, like, I want conference stuff to matter, but I don't know that I want it to matter that much. Like, if that's the only thing you have to, as your selling point, is that your conference, which, by the way, plays fewer conference games, is that you took fewer losses in your conference, but you still finished sixth in the Big 12 versus, I can't remember if Ole Miss was 8 or 9 in the SEC, but 6 versus 8 or 9 in the SEC, like, you know, if that is your one selling point, I'm not really feeling it, man. And so I feel like Ole Miss can find a way in here, but it certainly is a more anxious week than anyone would have preferred there. That's been kind of the big stuff here, Joe. Is there anything else around the SEC that you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, I was going to say quickly on Kentucky, like, if they don't get in, and I don't want to take that, you know, they could still do that. But I mean, it strikes me as that's going to be like a really big what if year where, I mean, they lost a series to Missouri. They lost a series to South Carolina. That was just a couple of weeks ago. You know, they got swept in series that, you know, early in the season, they got swept it against Arkansas. You win a game there. You flip just one of those games, like, you're probably telling a different story. So we have these teams every year that they're not unique in that, but you know, this late run that they've made show that they can actually get something done. It's just they just missed so many opportunities during the regular season that in hindsight look like, you know, they were actual opportunities for them to get something done.
Yeah, and you know, Cole Stupp was the leader in their rotation, and he got hurt against Georgia back in March. You know, he's out for the season. You know, what would it be like with him? And Araj Anu, who hit a go-ahead homer yesterday to beat Auburn. You know, he broke his hammock kind of in the middle of the year. Everyone has injuries. Everyone has these things, but I think Kentucky, a team on the edge, you know, it's harder for them to weather it than for, you know, the team that's projected to go out and win the SEC to weather these kinds of things. And, you know, Alabama's dealing with it too. You know, they haven't had Prelip all year, and how different would they be with Prelip? You know, that's part of how these teams end up where they are. But, you know, kudos to Kentucky for the way that they fought here the last month or so, you know, winning that series against Tennessee, winning the series against Auburn, you know, winning yesterday against Auburn. Sean Harney pitched outstanding. They've given themselves a chance. And, you know, more often than not, it feels like Kentucky over the years finds itself on the bubble. And, you know, that's right where they are again this year. The Pac-12 started their first ever conference tournament yesterday, Joe. And it was kind of chalky. Didn't seem like the Cal beat UCLA. That was different. And I guess Arizona beating Oregon was anti-chalk, but it was a 4-5 game, so whatever. Those were two of the bigger results. Oregon State won. They had to fight with Washington in a pretty offensive game, and Stanford took care of business. I'm not concerned about any of the Pac-12. Like the Pac-12 is not really dealing with bubble stuff. But it was fun to see them get it started and you know, see just what a conference tournament looks like out there in the conference in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like some of it too is the timing of it, right? Like their first game was starting like as a lot of the other conference tournaments were getting fired up. So like it's easy to kind of be like, oh, you know, I you know, forgot they got going there, but. The flip side of that is, you know, I get back to the hotel and like, oh, the Pac-12 tournament is still on. So that's kind of a nice little treat. So, yeah, UCLA, you know, losing that game, like, you know, under John Savage, UCLA is a program that really likes, you know, its pitching structure and all that. And we've talked about that before. And the fact that injuries this year have made them have to kind of fight that a little bit. But, you know, they threw Josh Hahn yesterday and did a bullpen game. And, you know, just weren't quite able to weather it on a day when Josh White threw the ball really well for Cal and looked like the Josh White that I think a lot of people thought Josh White could be coming into this season. So, you know, a little late for Cal on that front, unless they're going to go win this whole thing. And why the heck not? They played well in the season, but that was, you know, we talked about how are Pac-12 teams that haven't been in this environment going to approach this thing. And I think we did learn a little bit of something there. I mean, I think a lot of teams approached it pretty traditionally, which is throw like a midweek guy or, you know, do a bullpen game to start off and then like approach Thursday as kind of the first day of the weekend. But, you know, seeing UCLA go that route was not surprising, because that was a team I was interested to see how they approach it, because that is a team and a coaching staff that tends to like their structure on how they set things up.
They also were playing for like absolutely nothing this week, even if they'd won the Pac-12 right. tournament, I don't think they were going to host. So yeah, that makes it all the more easy for them to be like, all right, bullpen game to start things off against Cal and we'll see where we're at tomorrow.
There's also justification for it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because they still need to find, like, it feels like they're still trying to find exactly who they want to trust come postseason time. So there's also the additional justification for it.
No doubt about that. I think this tournament is ripe for an upset, just because, you know, who knows, like Stanford, like I said, most of these teams are locked into what they are. You know, Cal now has a chance in the winner's bracket to, you know, upset the apple cart a little bit. But, you know, Oregon State and Stanford are going to be top 8 seeds no matter what happens here. And, you know, Oregon was kind of on the hosting bubble and knocked them off with that loss yesterday. if they went out and they won this, they could, but coming out of the loser's bracket, considering their pitching depth issues, that doesn't feel likely. So, I'm just here for the entertainment with the Pac-12 tournament, and that's fine. That's part of what conference tournaments are, is just, sometimes they're important for bubble teams. Sometimes your conference doesn't really have bubble teams. And sometimes they're just there for the fun festival atmosphere of getting 8 teams, 10 teams, whatever, from the same conference in one spot and playing a good weekend of baseball. So for that aspect, I think the Pac-12 can have a fun weekend out there in Scottsdale.
At the Big West.
They are about to start their final weekend today. But I think everyone's running Thursday through Saturday series there in the Big West.
Just
the last regular season games of the season.
Yeah, they just like I think it's probably. I mean, at this point, I think it's especially with the Pac-12 going that way. I mean, I think it's probably only a matter of time until the Big West does something like that, because it's that league could not have been any more relevant the last month, just because the writing was on the wall for exactly how that was going to play out. And there are good enough teams in that league that, who wouldn't want to see Drew Thorpe pitch in that postseason setting? And like, you might give Cal Poly a puncher's chance in that tournament, because they have arguably the best pitcher and the best hitter on the board, right? Almost inarguably the best pitcher and the best hitter on the board. So, give your conference a chance to show something the last weekend, the last weekend of the regular season with a conference tournament, instead of what they're doing, which is that, literally tens of people are going to be watching their games,
I mean, it was, I feel bad. Long Beach State played Fullerton a week ago. We didn't give it a passing mention even. And, that's supposed to be one of the best rivalries in college baseball, but it meant so, so little. It meant nothing. And, it doesn't have to be that way. And look, a conference tournament for the Big West is not going to make them relevant in the way that they historically have been, but it would make the March, this year's March of UCSB winning the title effectively by sweeping Cal Poly like at the end of April, it would have made the march to the final the final line, it would have been more interesting if they'd been playing for something. And I'm not a huge conference tournament proponent for one bid leagues, not that the Big West is a one bid league, but just I'm not a proponent of the tournament in that setting typically, but I think the Big West, there's a difference between, I think you shouldn't take 8 teams out of your 10 team league to a mid-major conference tournament, and I don't think you should have a tournament. There's a medium in there that they can find, and hopefully that they are going to take a deeper look at something now. All right, Joe, that's pretty much the action from around conference tournaments. We had a few coaching changes since we last recorded. Ohio State fired Greg Beals after 12 years. He made the NCAA tournament 3 times there in Columbus, won the Big Ten tournament twice. Right now, that's probably the biggest opening to date is Ohio State. We'll see where more coaching changes do or don't come from over the next week or so. If you're interested, we're still tracking all of those over at baseballamerica.com, and we have published job profiles. Joe digs into the job, what it can be. I look at candidates. We publish those for Ohio State, for Kansas. I guess Rich Price, did we mention he retired? I don't remember. We got
there's a passing mention on the preview episode.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we have them for Ohio State, for Kansas, and for Tulane right now. And as more jobs come open, I'm sure we'll have a few more of those over the next, however long these big jobs keep opening for the next week, the next month, whatever. If you're into that kind of thing. All right, so we're going to leave it there today. A lot still to come here this weekend. So make sure you're following us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy. He is in the Big 12 tournament. I am at the SEC tournament, and plenty to read over at baseballamerica.com, including updated Field of 64 projections daily leading up to Selection Monday. The next time we talk to you on the podcast, there will be a field a real field of 64. So look for us to podcast following the announcement. That's Monday at noon Eastern. So we'll have a podcast in your feeds late on Memorial Day. If you're looking for it on the holiday evening, or as you start your commute on Tuesday, it'll certainly be in your podcast feeds by then. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Hit the subscribe, follow button, and we will continue coming at you twice a week here. And hopefully we have some fun stuff planned for the postseason as this time next week will be fully ramped up for regionals. Alrighty, so enjoy conference tournament weekend. Enjoy Selection Monday. Hopefully everyone is able to avoid a super anxious wait if your team is on that bubble. We'll be back here on Monday to talk all about how it shook out over the last few days here of the conference tournament weekend, regular season, whatever, leading up to Selection Monday. We'll be back here on Monday to wrap all of that up. So for Joe, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.